his father, they lived in Germany, and his father was a very outstanding Jew who learned any spare moment that he had, he learned, and a very, very observant Jew. And they had to run away from Germany, and they found themselves in Holland during the war. Now, you know what happened to Holland during the war. In Amsterdam alone, there were about 110,000-115,000 Germans. And these were all taken away to the camps. And only a couple of thousand, survived. And his father was there, with a family, and there was just nothing to eat. Now, in America, you know, you don't know those things. There's just nothing to eat. And the one thing happened, that one morning they got up, there was nothing in the house, and there was a bag of potatoes outside the door. They never found out how the bag of potatoes came there. Now, the potatoes, at least had that. And then the time came, he was learning, and knocked at the door. The Gestapo was there to come and take him away. So he said, I'm busy with learning, come on. He said, I just want to learn this little bit. Just let me just finish this little bit. So he said, what's written there? So he told me. He asked him a couple of questions on it. And he couldn't take it away. Couldn't take it away. And said, sent these men out that were with him. And he said, I'm leaving you. I'm leaving you. And he just went out. He was saved. And he came to Eretz Israel. And the first two things.
Neubert.
He wrote this Shmira Shabbos Gehilchoso.
This is the son or the father?
This is the son, yes. This is the father to whom this happened. The son wrote this sefer, Shmira Shabbos Gehilchoso. I met the son for the first time I met him. I don't think he was married. He was learning in Yeshiva Kol Torah. In Yeshiva Kol Torah. Now, this was the first time that I went to Israel. It was in end of 1915. So, end of 1915, that's over 30 years ago. And he was in Yeshiva. Now, I think the interpretation of my facts are correct. My facts is, I remember, it's very clear, there's no question about the facts. He was in the yeshiva, and he was the doctor for the yeshiva. What does it mean, the doctor for the yeshiva? He had aspirins, and he had Vaseline, and he had a few bandages. And if anything happened, they would come to him, see? Now, I don't know, or I don't remember, whether he got paid for this, for by the yeshiva, whether he got paid for this, or this was his chesed that he was doing. I don't know. It's possible that he needed a little bit of money. It's possible that they paid him. I don't know. Don't remember that. And I followed him, that he was learning in the yeshiva. And then we come quite regularly to Israel. I always followed him. And then I just had a liking for him. I didn't know about this and his father. This was only when I got to know him better. I just had a liking for him. And my children lived in Territorios, and he helped with them. Of course, he helped with them too. And then he was saying a shir already later. He was already giving a shir for the youngsters, but he was already giving a shir. And he was specializing on Shabbos, works on Shabbos, specializing on works of Shabbos, specializing in. Now, lots of things have been written in Shabbos, they've written in already in every imaginable language, in good English, in bad English, in all sorts of things. Then he was getting on very well. Before this was published, his book was published, I heard him give this shiur in Zurich. And Zurich wanted a Dayan, and he was on amongst those that they invited to come to see whether they would like him as a Dayan. Now, I was in Zurich just at that time, and he was the shiur, so I went to listen to the shiur. I was so impressed with the shiur. It was on Hilchas Nido. But it was a wonderful shiur that he gave. Anyway, I was certain that he would get the position. And then all of a sudden, he didn't get the position. A relative of mine got the position. I said, he's a top person. So I said to him, I heard him give this shiur. So
he said to your relative?
To my relative, yes. Okay. I said, I heard Neuberg. He said, how was it? What was it like? I said, superb. Superb. He said, I believe so. So my relative said to me, he should have got the position. I said, why didn't he get the position? He said, he turned it down. His wife didn't want to leave Israel. His wife turned it down. She didn't want to leave Israel. But why did I tell you the story beforehand? He wrote this book on Shmuel. Have you seen the book? Shmuel Shabbos Kippur. Have you seen that? Then you know what it is.
It's in Hebrew.
It's in our language.
It's very applied.
Anything that can with boilers and electrical appliances, all these things that come up now, he went into it and they did. Safer like that. I suppose since after the war, hundreds and hundreds of sforim have been written on Shabbos. Hundreds and hundreds of sforim. If I may just interrupt the trend of thought for a moment, you know in America they've got Jewish Book Week. Have you ever heard of it? No.
Book Club, you mean?
No, it's Jewish Book Week. I beg your pardon? And they do it, it's the federations that do it. The federations are really responsible. They have a book week for the whole of America. In fact, it's taken on to such an extent that even outside of America, in England, they observe Jewish Book Week, and the same Jewish Book Week, and they send them the posters from America. In South Africa, Jewish Book Week is a big thing, you see.
Do they work during this week?
I wouldn't know. They're not really well acquainted.
And what are the federations push the rest of the year?
this is what they do. The thing is, they also publish, and I think they work together with the Jewish Publication Society of America. The Jewish Publication Society of America has got a yearbook, and it's a very good piece of work. It's the information there, it's scientifically oriented, and it's an excellent yearbook about the position of Jews in America and the proportions of Jews in the cities and all that. It's very well done in other countries. It's done. They do this, and I think the federations publish also a Jewish Book of the Week annual or something like that. And what is the annual? They speak about all the books that have been published. All the books have been published. Now, the Jewish Book Week is very much a secular affair. Very much a secular affair.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
It's very much a secular thing. Now, when I was in South Africa, they made a lot of use of me during the Jewish banquet. First of all, there was a man, Dr. Aptis, unfortunately no longer alive, and he was a wizard for antiques. But a wizard. I mean, we used to just marvel. He would go into a junk shop, and he would come out of the silver besobbing box. I could have been in the junk shop for 10 years. I wouldn't have found it. He just goes in and he puts his hand in there and he takes out it. So once I said to him, I said, I don't believe it. You have it in your pocket before you came in. And you put in your hand in to show me how clever you are. I don't believe you could have done that. He was just this type of person. And he used to organize the Jewish book week always. They made a lot of use out of me. Not a lot of use, but they made use out of me. What did they do? From my library, I had some very stuff that I had still from my great-grandfather's forum and these things, first editions, which I'm not interested in first editions, but I had first editions. I had the first editions of Rabbi Akiva Eger. I had an Abarbanel from the 1600, printed in Lipsia is this, Leipzig, I suppose, Lipsia. Printed in Lipsia, I had a Josephus, a very old Josephus from the 16th century. That came, people gave me these things, had them, heirlooms, and they wanted me to have them. So I had these things, so they used to make a lot of use, and then I always used to give a lecture during book week. I used to give one lecture during book week. You can imagine my lecture for the book week, and I tried to get the Torah point of view across, you see. In Jewish, but it was a very secular affair. They didn't realize how secular it was. The people who were engaged in it didn't realize. And this Dr. Apti was an Orthodox Jew and a very knowledgeable Jew. And he used to give it always try, and that I suppose that's why he brought me into it so much. He always tried to give it more Torah content. He did it very nicely. It was a very good affair. But they used to publish this annual, I'm sure they still do it. An annual Jewish book week. It was a paper cover, but it was quite thick. And what they used to do is they used to give the books that were published during that year in English, in Yiddish, and in Hebrew. And I remember one year they had to give the numbers. And they didn't give Sidurim and Kumoshim, that they didn't put, you see. And the books that were written on Torah, it was overwhelming in English. The books that were written, it flooded the, it just swamped the whole thing. Now, this is a secular thing, you see. And they wrote about this. Now, this is at a time when predictions were made that by the year 2000 there wouldn't be any Jews in America. You remember those predictions?
Yes.
That by the year 2000, so on the one hand you get these predictions that by the year 2000 there won't be any Jews in America, and yet you've got, this is what's coming off the printing press. And until then, they'd all written you, Jewish book week. You can tell the strength of a people by its literature and what it publishes. So this you had to tell them. That is the extent to what is happening. So any amount of sforim are written today on all sorts of subjects. Some good, some mediocre, some that should never have been printed. Never should have been printed. That stuff is also being printed today. But anyway, Neubert comes along and he publishes a book on Shabbos which is superb. It's superb not only for what it says, but the way it's got up. The language, it's clear, it is precise, it is exact. and how everything is ordered, you know, everything is so easy to find there. It's indexed well, but even without the indexes you can't go wrong. It's so clear, everything follows, you know exactly where to look for something, and everything is so clear. And when this came into my hands the first time, a bag of potatoes saved their lives. The Geshta, poor man, comes in, finds him learning, decides to leave him. They come to Eretz Yisrael, and this is what he's produced. It's possible that that was the reason that to give this a chance to come. Because it's not only what he tells us about Shabbos. This has already proved the example for others. That's the way you write a sefer. You can write a sefer on any subject. There's a man in Cohen in Eretz Yisrael, also a very fine man. He's writing. He writes on Challah, for example, on Tevilas Kelim. But he's writing it on that style now. It's already set a style. This is the way you produce something today. This is what you produce. I sit very often and I think, he had to be saved. This was a contribution, he had to be saved. Because this is a sefer that's made a contribution. Original, the originality is in its presentation. That's where the originality is. Right, now let us go on with our work.
What a comfort to suffer, man, to turn away like that.
If I can ask a question.
Yes.
What was the pasuk that he was reading?
Pardon?
Do you know what the pasuk was?
He told me. The pasuk that was doing is a strange thing. He was doing the Gemara in Shabbos, where the Geir comes to Hillel and says, teach me the Torah on... And he said, "V'haftu l'reyecho kumocho," and the rest is explanation. He tells that to the Geshtah poor man. This is what Neubert told me. So he said, the man said to his father, in that case, do you love me? He said, yes. He said, you know what I'm here for? I've come to take you away. You know what that means? He said, yes, I know. He said, and you mean to tell me that you love me? He said, yes. He said, why? He said, because it says I must love you and I must understand that you are doing what you are doing because that is your duty to come and do. That is what he told me. That's the passion that he was saying. That is the conversation that took place between them. If any of you meet Neubert one day, you can tell him that you heard those two stories from me about him, and ask him about it. He lives in Bayit Vegan.
Is he a Rosh Hashiva now?
I think he gives a shiur he gives a lot of shiur in Bayit Vegan because he's a specialist. He was giving a shiur on ribis, which we've had a little bit here. You give an increase, you'd be able to increase by a third, because she brings him money, mezumonim, the wife brings mezumonim, then the husband gives an increase of it, because he uses it, he can use it in business. And we discussed, but isn't that interest? And we said, it's not interest, because if, for example, they were to be divorced the next day, she gets the same amount of money.
So it's not payment.
So it's not payment, it's not agar natra. It's not agar natra. It's not money that you pay for waiting for that you've given in time, you see. So, in what connection was that telling you?
I was asking, is this gentleman a Rosh Hashiva?
Yes, he was giving on ribis. He was giving a shiur on ribis. He was getting a big crowd of people coming to the shiur in Bayit Vegan. And it's a difficult subject. It's a very difficult subject. He was giving from Yerodea. His speciality is psak. The final word in how in a lot of the final word, how you pastor, that is his speciality. And he's got Shabbos, and now he worked on Hilchos Nidor. He was tops on Hilchos Nidor, and now he was working when I was in Israel, not the last time, the time before last, some people invited us to come over, and I came over and I said to the young man, I said, what are you learning? And he told me, I go to Shir on Ribis. I said, well, what are you doing with Ribis? On Ribis. I said, what kind of a Shir is it? He said, well, it's superb. She said, I said, when is the Shir? He said, well, it's actually now. I said, so why aren't you going? He said, well, we are entertaining you. I said, you do nothing of the kind. You go straight to the Shir, we'll wait. You go straight to the Shir. I said, how is Shir? Go to the Shir. Say, so went to the Shir. Right, yeah, this is
how is that name spelled?
Neuwirth. 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 I think that is, it might be spelled Neuwurth with two dots over there. You may be spelled that correct. Right. Now, I'm very anxious that you should know all the words that we are using in the Agadata. We had a piece of Agadata. You remember?
Mm-hmm.
With the daughter of Nachimon ben Gurion and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we had this piece of Agadata. I'm very keen that you should know all the words, that you shouldn't get stuck with any of the words. The Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara, I take it you know quite well, until the part where Tonu Rabbona Maise Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Is that right? Can I take that for granted?
Yeah.
Now, it's the words that I want you to know in here. So what I'm going to go further on the Gemara, but then I want you to do Chavrusa and to go through this passage. It's an easy passage, but the thing is to get the words. If there's anything you don't understand in the reasoning, you can always ask me, and then we'll go over that.
Shall we do it with the Rashi also?
With the Rashi too, yes, there isn't much Rashi in it, but the Rashi helps you to learn it on your own. But it's very important to me that you know all the words, because it's easy. Also, Rabbi Tzodek. It says, well, let us do two lines from the bottom on the previous page, where the Gemara asks a question. The Nagdimon ben Gurion lo ovad tzedoko, and did Nagdimon the son of Gurion then not do any tzedoko? Rabbi Yaakov David, have you got it?
Yes.
The Gemara asks the Nagdimon ben Gurion lo ovad tzedoko, didn't he do any tzedoko?
Mm-hmm.
Because you remember that they lost all the money,
right.
And the daughter said that the reason that all the money was lost is because they have a saying in Yerushalayim that the tzedokah and chesed is the salt of money. If you want to preserve money, you give tzedokah and you give chesed, and then that is the way you preserve, that's the way you pickle your money, and then you ensure that you'll always have it. And so the Gemara asks, two lines from the bottom of the page, the Nagdimon ben Gurion, the Nagdimon ben Gurion, Dimon ben Gurion lo ovad tzedoko. Any word you don't know the meaning of there? The word ovad, do. In Hebrew you would say oso, lo oso tzedoko, but in Aramaic it's ovad. But it asks the Gemara, the Nagdimon ben Gurion lo ovad tzedoko, and Nagdimon ben Gurion, didn't he do tzedoko? That you say, because that's why they lost the money. The Hotanya, we learned in the Beraita actually, Omru Olov al Nagdimon ben Gurion, it was said about Nagdimon ben Gurion, Keshehoyo Yotzemi Beiso le Beis HaMidrash, when he used to go out from his own house to the Beis HaMidrash, claim me last Hoyu Matzin Tachto. They would put woolen cloth under his feet, that he shouldn't be have to walk in the dust or on the wet. They used to put in Uvoina Nienu Makapli Nelson Maacharov. And the Aniyin used to come and they used to fold it up afterwards behind him. So we see that he used to do tzedoko, yes.
Just the word clay, meal.
Milas is a clay. I
clay is an article.
An article, yes.
So what's milas?
Milas is wool.
Wool.
Wool, yes. Tzemer. Like the Hebrew tzemer.
I think I'm.
What is it called? What's that?
No, I've got it.
Yes. And then the poor, the Aniyim, the poor people came and folded it up from behind him.
Okay.
Rabbi Yaakov David, what is it?
Oh, I was just reading it.
So they used to fold it up behind him. So from the Beraisa, obviously, they folded it up behind him, and that belonged to them, and they kept it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a means of his dispensing tzedoko. That was a means of his dispensing. Very much, you remember, like Boaz and Ruth, when he told his coats rim, when he told his reapers, Ruth was going behind and collecting the gleanings, he told them, he said, you drop a few more. Just drop so that give her a chance, you see. And he didn't want, he knew, she wouldn't take, just to take charity, she wouldn't take. But this, the gleanings belongs to the poor. So the best way he could do, he said, you drop them. And she was so pleased. She got a lot of gleanings, more than she ever thought that she'd be able to get. And that helped her along sore over that difficult time. So he, instead of just throwing the money to the Aniyim, do you think it was important for him that he must walk on this? It was a way of giving it to the Aniyim and not to embarrass them. That is the way he did it. So we see that he did give tzedoko.
Mm-hmm.
And now comes the Meirah D'Kazach. You know what a Meirah D'Kazach is? Thing that just it strikes terror in one's heart. Answers the Gemara, I boys aimer lichvel derhu de ovad. Says the Gemara, yes. One way you can answer the question is that he did it. Can you see the word ovad again?
Mm-hmm.
He did it lichvel derhu de ovad. He did it for his own glory. And you can imagine, there was something impure in it. That he thought, he was thinking, he wanted the honor. The Ibois Amo, and says the Gemara, or if you want to, you can say, Kidaboy le Lemevad, as he should have done it. Again, the word Lemevad, to have done. Kidaboy le Lemevad, as he should have done it. Lo Ovad, he didn't do.
What did we say? What's Kidaboy, as he should have?
Kidaboy means, it can mean three things.
Mm-hmm.
It can mean boy, he posed a problem. Now that, it doesn't mean at all here. The next thing it can be, boy, he wanted to. And the other one is boy, what was it? Or the other one can be, he should have done. You follow? And really, those two are related. And if you want to strike a middle word, necessary. As it was necessary for him to have done, he didn't do. As he should have done, he'd have boy leila mevat. As he should have done, lo ovat, he didn't do. He'd have amri inshi. Now, just the words inshi are men. Inshi are people. As people say, he ka as amri they say, kida amri inchi, as people say. Have you got the words?
Yes.
Just get the words right, and it's so easy here to get it. Lafum gamlo shichno. Lafum, what is lafum?
Like what's the?
According, yes. You've got lafum tsar or agro, according to the distress is the reward. Lafum gamlo, according to the camel. Shichno is the load. You've got to take the camel into consideration. Is it a camel in good condition or is it a camel in bad condition? If it's a camel in bad condition, reduce the load. If it's a camel in good condition, add to the load. A person like Nabimon Ben Gurion, he didn't carry the load he carried, wasn't sufficient. Two there. Have you got it? Mark, clear?
Yes.
You got it clear? Does the man give? Was he didn't give enough. So how much should he have given? Those things I'll explain to you a little bit later. Let's go on.
How much he gave or the manner in which he gave?
No, the manner in which he gave seemed to be very good. But
he did it for his honor.
That is one thing. That's one thing he did it for his honor.
That's a manner, isn't it?
Well, you see, there are two things. The one thing is you can give it in a bad way. Gives it, always giving it out of the deck, always giving in a bad way. Another one can give in a very nice way. Please, take this. I want to thank you for coming and asking. I'm very grateful to you. And please, if any time you need, come to me again. Anything wrong with the manor?
Uh-huh.
And he just says, have you got a photograph of mine? That's all you see. Right, now let's go on. Well, you don't have to spell my name. That's all. But, isn't that so? So the manner he gives is very good. But he did it for his own honor. He did it for his own honor. But you could be quite sure that Nabimon Ben Gurion didn't do it in such a crude way. Must have been, if he did do anything like that, he wanted his honor, I suppose. But it
was. They tried to say that he did not give enough.
Well, that's the second. There are two answers. The one answer is he gave enough. But what he gave is his own honor came too much into it.
So
you understand?
The word is Kessa.
Well, if you know, you can
it
do
Kessa. It wasn't Kessa.
That is the one. The other answer is he didn't give sufficient. He gave a tremendous sum of money, but for him it wasn't sufficient. And that I've got to discuss with you, and I'll explain it to you. So if he earns $1 million a year, so, and if he gives 100,000 a tenth, isn't it sufficient? All right, he'll give a fifth. $200,000 a year, isn't that sufficient? How much must he give? And what happens if he says, oh, I'll still give a little bit more. I'll give $250,000 a year. And he earns $1 million a year. Is that sufficient or isn't it sufficient?
Depends how his wife presses.
Is it sufficient or isn't it sufficient?
Not sufficient.
Well, why not? So what is the standard? Is it a tenth or is it a fifth? So what is the... What I've got to discuss with you is, what is the measure? By what do you measure? Well, that is... that I'll explain to you. I don't want to explain to you now.
A quick question and a simple one. Talganuth asked last week if we couldn't tell from all this that Nachman Ben-Gurion was not a man on a very high level to have been punished this way.
No, on the contrary, he was a man on a very high level.
Right, I'm asking if the fact that they mention him by name, if that isn't another clue that he was a man
of high level. Oh, yes. I mean, either very good or very bad. That's
uh-huh. But a red man.
Yes, oh, yes. Oh, yes.
He's going to the study.
Oh, pardon?
He's going to the...
Yes. Oh, there's no question. There's no question. I want you to know, you've got a man like Korach in the... Korach, take Esav. Take Esav. Ram Gamliel said, he said, when Esav went in to say good morning to his father, and he'd already been out in the field, he would come in and he would change his clothes and put on his best clothes to go and say good morning to his father. Rabbi Gamliel said, I don't do it. My father is Rabbi Yehuda Nosi. He said, I don't do that. But Esav did do it. You've got to understand what it was. And I want to tell you something else. if you would have been together with Aesop, you would have said, what a gentleman. What a gentleman. The way he would be dressed, the way he would sit at the table. It should be quite sure. Anybody who came into the door, he stood up immediately, went to greet him. He was an absolute gentleman.
So why do we describe him as the characteristic of immediate gratification?
Oh, that was his look, that was his weakness. That was the weakness. That was his weakness. Self-gratification.
Everything else was good.
Well, that was his weakness. He wanted to be satisfied. His tummy had to be satisfied, his sexual instincts had to be satisfied, just had to be satisfied. I'm just busy on a Chavis Alevovis, a piece of the Chavis Alevovis, where he speaks, the Mishnah says, Hakino behataybo behakola, motzin es o odomino olo, in Pirkei Avos. Jealousy, taybo, how do you answer? Desire, that jealousy, desire, and honor, and power. These are the things that ruins a man's chances of an olam ha'emes. And don't forget that the person who gets olam ha'emes is the person who already enjoys olam ha'emes here on earth. On earth, he already enjoys olam ha'emes. He finds already great joy in spiritual matters. So he's already getting. Otherwise it's no good. You'll come there and he won't have the experience, he won't have to enjoy it, he won't have had the experience. He's got to have something already here.
How is saying
come there, you don't understand anything that goes on. Yes?
How is saying that Esau's one main flaw was immediate gratification, how does that jive with the fact that he also apparently murdered people?
Because that's the same, it's the same thing.
Not the same as hunger and
sex. Look, if you get a person who, the CIA, what do they call these people? CIA, what do they call them? They tell me they also murder people. There was one man who wrote, he murdered people, he said, yeah, I had to murder people, they got into the way, yeah, we're running a country. this isn't a banana republic. A country of over 200 million people. What do you expect me to do? That is what Asa would have answered. You see, that's what you mean. I'm running an empire. I can't do. You don't know what it is. He was very sophisticated about it. Right. But that isn't. So there are two answers that are given. One answer is that he did it for his own covet, and the other answer is he did it lefum gam lo shichno. He was a very strong camel, and the load wasn't sufficient for him. That was the matter. All right. Tanya, a new Gemara now. Tanya, says the Gemara we learned in the Baraiso. And don't forget that this Baraiso goes on what went before.
Meaning,
and this is a principle. This is a principle that is. You see, it's very difficult for me to speak to you about these principles because we don't experience these principles and we don't know what it's like. The principle is that if the Am Yisrael would do everything exactly as it had to be done, there would be no problems whatsoever. No problems. To such an extent, that even the work and everything would be so minimal that the Jew would be able to sit the whole day and do Torah.
No problems for anybody or just for the Jews?
For the Jews there would be no problem whatsoever. And afterwards for the others there would also be many less problems. But for the Jew, there would be no problem whatsoever. That is the basis. And on the other hand, if the Jew does not fulfill himself as he should fulfill himself, then it's not that he'll be like others, he'll suffer like others. He'll suffer 10 times more than anybody else suffers. In fact, it's more than 10 times because it's a different type of suffering. It's a different category of suffering, and that's what we had before. But I've got to get on with the Gemara. I just want you to understand the basis for it. Dr. Trask, you follow what I'm saying. So therefore says, Omer Rabin Ozeb Rabi Tzodok, said Rabin Ozeb Rabi Tzodok, Ereb Nechomo, may I, this is an expression, really what it means is, may I not witness to enjoy the comfort of Jerusalem, that is to see the Jerusalem rebuilt, Imloro Osio, if I hadn't seen this with my own eyes. It's a very strong way of putting it. But literally it means, Erev Nechoma, may I see the Nechoma of Jerusalem, the comfort of Jerusalem, if I had not seen it. That is the way the Jew speaks. He speaks in a euphemism. You follow? He doesn't say, may I not see the comfort of Jerusalem. He says, may I see the comfort of Jerusalem, if it isn't true what I'm saying. In Lora or Siho, that I didn't see her. Shehoiso melakete se'ori mibein talfei susi. That if it's not true that I saw her gathering the barley grains between the hooves of the horses, ba'aku in aku korosio leo mikroze, then I said concerning her this posuk from Shira Shirim. Im lo teid il loch ya yofol benoshim, te'il loch be'ikve hatzon, ure'i es gedio saich. Literally it means as follows. Im lo teidi, and if you don't know, O you most beautiful amongst women, and as I explained it to you last time, Shir HaShirim is a dialogue between the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and the Am Yisrael, between Hashem and the people of Israel. And Hashem is speaking, Im lo tevilach, if you don't know, O most beautiful amongst women, then tse'iloch be'ikvei tzol, go out amongst the hooves of the sheep, ure'i es giriyosayich, and feed your kids. Al tikre gediyosayich elo gebiyosayich. Don't read it and feed your kids, but read it and feed your own body. If you want to, we can take it a little bit more deeply. So he says, that is the meaning of those words. That is what I see in the meaning of those words. That Hashem is speaking to the Avisor and said, you've got to be prepared that is something that you will go down to. You can suffer to that extent that you will be getting it there. Is that clear?
Why to go out? Let's say go out to the sheep.
Well, that is, he saw her. He saw the daughter of Nagdiman Ben Gurion gathering the barley clay. He said, "Where was she? She was amongst the hoofs of the sheep." He saw that.
Hoofs of the horses.
Hoofs of the sheep.
Susim, isn't it?
In Shir HaShirim it says sown, and in the Gemara it talks about
Susi.
Yes.
The fact remains, it's in the animals. It's in that is where she found it. And in, she said, he saw this verse of the Torah referring to a situation such as this.
Well, things could get so bad.
That could get so bad. From there. Yeah. Things could get so bad. Yes.
Just a general question. This pasuk in Shir HaShirim.
Yes.
Are the pasukim in Nach like the Torah? In other words, can this pasuk mean many other things in other contexts, or is it specifically that this pasuk is here to teach us this and not?
You know what I would like to do with you one day. I would like to take Ha'azinu with you.
Mm-hmm.
And to, there are four levels on which you can take it. I would like to do two levels with you. The one is, and exactly the same words, and it's meant to be like that. The one is where Hashem is speaking to the Am Yisroel. And the other, where Hashem is speaking to the Umas Olam, to the nations of the world.
Ha'azinu?
In Ha'azinu.
Ha'azinu, I mean, the Torah, I mean, is yes. Everything. But Noach...
which suggests that if you get the Song of Devorah, for example, the Song of Devorah is, there's more Kedusha in the song than there is in the prose. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it says, Kol Ashirim Kodesh. The Shir Ashirim Kodesh Kodoshim. But the Shir Ashirim is Holy of Holies. So there is something quite exceptional in Shir Ashirim. And there's tremendous Kabbalah in Shir Ashirim. Tremendous Kabbalah. Foundations of Kabbalah in Shir Ashirim.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
That is the thing. Right. Now, you are all going to have to work this together, and whilst you are working this piece of Gemara out together, I will help you and bring with what you're doing if you've got trouble with the words, but then I will deal with some principles that are connected with this Gemara, and once we are dealing with the Gemara, it's good for you to have these principles. We haven't got a Shulchan Aruch that. Omar Rav Shamon Bar Abu Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Have we got the place? Shamon bar Abu Omar Rabbi Yochanan said Rav Shamon, the son of Abu, that Rabbi Yochanan said, "Hichniso lo zohov shamin oso baharehu keshiv." If she brings in gold, then we assess the gold and according, and we write it in according to its worth. That is, we don't make it less. You remember? Because with the things that she brought in, we made it less. But with gold, this is something different. It's got a yes, gold, until comparatively recently, gold was the standard by which everything else was, now it's, at the moment it's not. May even come back to it. So Omer Rav Shamon bar Abba of Rabbi Yochanan, Yichlises lo zohov shamin oso. And if you look at Rashi, Rashi says zohov, he says chatichos zohov, pieces of gold, bars of gold, pieces of gold, some bigger, some smaller, but they are pieces of gold. Then we assess it at its exact value, and that is what it's written here. Baharehu keshivyo, shaminoso, we assess it, baharehu keshivyo, and it is according to its value. That is all it says. Now the Gemara asks a question on that. The Gemara says, Meisvei, I'll ask you a question because we learned in the Baraisa, hazoho barehu kekeli, that zohov has got the same dinim as keli. Now, the first question we ask, what kind of objects? Zohov has got the same law as objects, as articles. What kind of articles? Mm-hmm. Says the Gemara, my love kekelim shel kesef the pachsi. When it says in the second Baraisa that Zohov, if there is gold, they've got the same law as vessels. Says the Gemara, what must it mean? What kind of vessels? It surely means vessels of silver. The reason why the Gemara assumes that it means vessels of silver is that vessels of gold do not deteriorate in use, whereas vessels of silver do deteriorate. That is the reason for it.
Wait, that's very strange. Why can't it be vessels of glass?
He says, Zohar has got the law of utensils, of articles.
Yes.
If you say of articles of glass, then it just doesn't make sense.
Well, I'm missing something.
Okay, it doesn't make sense in accord with what we studied before, that if she brings in kaolin, we mark it down because of questions of valuation.
That's right.
Questions of Hashum.
So that's what it asks. Now, first of all, take Rabbi Yochanan's statement. Rabbi Yochanan's statement is, Yichniso lo zohov, shamino silva arehu kashivyo. She brings him in gold.
Okay.
That is, pieces of gold.
Okay.
Now, he doesn't have to add to it, and he doesn't have to subtract from it.
That's
it's right. Entered into the kasuba what she brought in.
Correct.
That's all it says. That is the statement. Mm-hmm. Now the Gemara examines the statement, and the first examination is from the vantage point of a Braisa. Says the Gemara, Meister, I'll ask you a question because we learned in the Braisa, Hazov Harehu Kekeli. Zohov, that is pieces of gold, has got it, is dealt with in exactly the same way as articles of gold is dealt with.
Oh, it's articles.
Well, these are gold vessels then. These are gold vessels.
Gold vessels. It's dealt with in the same thing as gold vessels. Now,
so then why do we now speak of silver vessels?
That's where it comes.
Okay.
Says the Gemara, but it doesn't say as gold vessels. It says gold, if gold is in bars and in pieces, it is dealt with in exactly the same way as if they were vessels, or utensils, whatever it is.
Okay.
Let us use the word vessels and then it's easier. David, are you right there? It's dealt with in exactly the same way as vessels. Says the Gemara, that's all the Baraisa says.
Okay.
Says the Gemara, my love, surely it means kekelim shel kesef de parsi. It means it should be dealt with in the same way as vessels, that is, vessels of silver that deteriorate. And therefore, one has to write in an amount, he's allowed to take off from the amount. If it was assessed at 1,000, he diminishes the amount that is written in, as we learned before.
Because the value is in dispute. It's not an undisputed value, like gold.
Yeah, there's two.
When you have an article of gold, you know it's worth a certain amount.
Yes,
but if you have this vessel of silver, you don't know exactly how much it's
yes,
worth.
Yes, so it says we are to regard it as vessels of silver. That's what the Gemara wants to say.
Okay.
But all it says in the Braisa is it's to be regarded as vessels.
Okay.
Says the Gemara, no, it doesn't mean that. But it means kekelim shel zov de lo parsi. It's to be regarded as vessels of gold which don't deteriorate. And now,
silver.
The vessels of silver. A vessel of gold. Kekelim shel that don't deteriorate. And now Charles is very concerned about this. He says, but vessels of gold also deteriorate.
No, I'm concerned because we're speaking of vessels of silver coming up.
Yes, it says it means vessels of silver.
Right.
That they deteriorate, so he must assess it less. He says, lo, kekelim shel zov de lo parsi. He says, no, it means, the Braisa means, like vessels of gold that don't deteriorate.
The
rhythm
of the silver.
Are we pardon?
The rhythm of the silver.
Yes. Right. Asks the Gemara, in Cain, if so, kekelov mi boyele. Do you see the word mi boye again? It should have.
Yes.
We had it before with the Nabimon Ben Gurion. As he should have done, he didn't have. Says the in Cain, kekelov mi boyele. It should have said. Are we pardon? Kekelov. Zov should be like its own kaling, which is correct, you see.
Or should be actually the other way around. Kaling of Zahav should be like Zahav.
But it's not speaking about that. It's speaking about bars of gold.
Or pieces.
Pieces. You're pieces, right. Of balls, yes. Okay. Pieces or balls, you see. It says the pieces of balls are to be regarded as the kalim of, as if they were vessels of gold. The question is, you might ask, so why doesn't it say it's regarded as gold and finished? The reason why it doesn't say it should be regarded as gold is because if it says it's regarded as gold, he might have to add a third to it. Because gold is the best currency of all. And she brings it in and he can use it. Mm. So we say, no, if she brings in gold bars, we assess it as if she brought in vessels. Which means that it stays there and he doesn't use it. And, or it's used very little, but it doesn't use, it's not used, and they are assessed according to their value. Just one moment, Charles, yes? Sir.
Then we have a question, why is that?
Why is what?
Why do we not mark up the gold a third? If in fact it's a liquid currency as dinari mark.
Yes. Well, obvious because if it's gold bars, he's not going to do it. You know, you've got exactly the same position today. Exactly the same position today. Where people have got, if they've got certain gold, they don't want to sell it. They just keep it.
Okay.
They keep it, they don't want to sell it. So if it's gold bars, it's got the din of gold vessels, it's assessed for what they are worth, and that is all.
It's not the same as gold coins.
We're going to get gold coins in a moment. We're going to
I would think if I was either a Kala or had a daughter who's going to become a Kala, there was some gold.
Yes.
I wouldn't it be wise to sell the gold and get some dinarim and then bring the dinarim in and then they write it up a third, the ketubah.
You see, you are speaking now with a lot of hindsight. Because gold has tumbled from 800 to, what is it, to 300. It's tumbled. But when gold goes from 300 to 800...
But in these periods, it was relatively stable, I would imagine. It was a fixed rate.
It's sorry, well, you're going to have to wait for me.
It was a very important commodity. Because if you had to flee, you took with your gold. And you could use it anywhere. Because there was a reason keeping it in. I want to tell you, people in South Africa keep Kruger Rand.
Okay.
Because if they've got to run away, and you know they might have to run away. In America they know. They know it in America better than they do in South Africa. That if they've got to run away, then they take their gold, their Kruger Rands with them. Mm-hmm. Are you pardoned?
Yeah. Okay. I think, now there's...
We should go a little bit further just to get that.
If I may, though, for right
yes,
now.
Yes, certainly.
We've looked before at a case of dinarim, bringing in...
Yeah, but dinarim are going to come up now.
And we've looked before at a case of Kruger Rands.
Yes.
And here is how I understand this at this point, and you can tell me whether it's a correct view or not. That pieces of gold, some large, some small, doesn't actually necessarily mean bullion that's an even weight... It has an assigned value. It means irregular.
That's right.
So that if you go to a goldsmith with this gold, he'll say, well, one goldsmith may tell you it's worth this much. Another one may say, no, it's not worth that much.
Yes.
It's not all 22 carats. Some is 14. Some is 18.
Yes. Never so in those days it was gold was gold.
But even so, the size and irregular size will create discrepancies in valuation.
Right, yes.
Whereas with Kruger Rands, there's a set price.
Yeah.
So that before with Kruger Rands, we say we value them exactly as what they are.
Yes.
Because there is an accepted value that's constant on any given day. And with dinarim, we say because they're liquid and can be used immediately, we raise them up. With these pieces of gold, because they have to undergo a valuation process, which may fluctuate from place to place, we then say we're going to take them similar to kalim, as we saw before.
Yes.
Where kalim, we write down the value.
That's right. That's right.
Wait, we're not writing down the value, though.
We are. We are, as much as it's worth.
Rabbi,
That's what it says. Kishovia, it says, Shamin Oso Varehu Kishivio. Like its worth, like its value. Yes, sir.
Yeah, but exactly as its value.
Right.
So we don't mark it down.
No, we don't mark it down. We don't mark it down.
When you said mark it down, I thought you meant...
No. I put it down on paper.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
But we think we're going to value it the same way as we would Krugerrands?
No, we value it as if it was Kaylin.
So we make a shum.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. So, and that is, in effect... That may mean it has a lower value than the in-laws. Assessment.
No, but what Marx says, do we reduce it in its value? No.
Well, that's a question between Mark and I.
No, we don't reduce it in its value. We don't say that in the Kalas house they make it worth more.
But then why do we even mention Kaylin? Because Kaylin, we know from before, we do mark them down.
We're coming to that. Just one moment. We'll come to that, yes?
If he was to divorce her, does he then have to return the value of the gold, or does he have to return the gold itself?
The gold itself as it is, unless he has used it. Then he's got to return the value of the gold.
But what I'm thinking is, if he was to return the value of the gold, suppose the gold either inflated or deflated in the time period.
But it's written in the value.
So you're talking about the weight, not the
monetary. No, the value. Thing. The value is written in.
$10,000. Very thing. What if the price of gold goes from 300 to 800, and he is using
it? Then you said quite rightly that it doesn't go so easily. You see, this normally speaking, this gold wouldn't go out to be used. Mm-hmm. You see, you people have had it so in America. You don't know what went on. You're young. What went on in the times of the Depression, Yaakov David, I'm sure remembers. Look here, my mother, in the time of the Depression, took her jewelry and sold her jewelry. So there wasn't any money. So my parents-in-law, I know, took my wife's parents, it was the same thing. They took their jewelry, the gold that they had, and they sold it to get a little bit of money. You know what it means to a woman to sell her jewelry? That's what they did. They sold it to get it. But normally speaking, they would never have sold it.
I understand.
So if they sell it and it's written in the kasuba, then the husband gives the amount that was written in the kasuba.
Even if the price of gold has gone
away. Well, that makes no difference. All it's fallen.
Because if he was to return the actual gold, then she'd have a lot more money.
Doesn't matter. That's what's written in the kasuba. That's, he's got to give what was written in the kasuba.
So why don't they write in the weight of the gold instead of the value of the gold?
Because. And you always have got to weigh it and all that sort of thing. This is we don't put in weights. We always only put in money in the kasuba. Kasuba, there's no weights. And we don't even specify articles, really. We say for linen so much and so much, gold so much and so much. But there isn't the way. Yes,
it's a risk.
And we mustn't forget that in those days, weights, they didn't have weights. Weights was by displacement. It was by displacement. Yes.
If all that is true, I don't see what's wrong with Mark's idea of selling it and then writing in the kutsuba.
To sell gold. To sell it.
Before
you don't sell gold, you see. So you don't sell gold. Dollars you sell. Paperbacks. Greenbacks. But you don't sell gold. You don't sell gold. Russia's selling gold now. And causing a lot of disturbance. She's selling gold because she's got to. She's forced to sell gold. America isn't selling gold.
I don't have any money.
I've still got a lot of gold left. They're not selling gold. And what do you call it? And the Arabs were buying gold. Well, you don't sell gold. It's that you keep. You sell it when you've got to sell it. But this is sort of kept. It's kept as a hedge against inflation. All these things. Gold was always something very special.
And now we have to understand what it means that the law of gold is like the law of Kaylin.
Yes. Hmm. So we say, the law, what is it? If we say, so it says, I would like to say, if the law of Kalim, the Parsi, says, lo kekelim shel kesef, that diminish. It says, lo kekelim shel zov, the lo parsi, that don't diminish. Ask the Gemara in Kain, kekelov mi boyalei. It should say, like kelim, it should say. Not like kelim, but like its own vessels, which is a very good question. Mm. That's the first question. Now the Gemara comes, just let us do the Rashi on that. The Rashi is Zohov. Can you see there? That's the Rashi. Zohov. Says Rashi. Got the place? Zohov. Can you see just?
Yes.
Zohov says Rashi. Chaticha Zohov. Pieces of the gold. Varehu Keshivyo. Lo Yosef Shlich Lo Yivchos Chomesh. He mustn't add a third and he mustn't diminish a fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Like the other laws. Zov arehu kekelim. The Braisa says, Zov is like kelim. Zov shovur arehu kekelim. Pieces of silver, pieces of gold, is to be considered like vessels. Says Rashi, umeforish for ozil my kelim. And further on, it explains what are kelim. Now, this next piece of Rashi goes on further, and the following piece of Rashi also goes on further, and that following that also goes on further, but beneath that there is a Rashi with a little aleph in brackets next to it, the Patsi, can you see?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that Rashi should actually have been written earlier, because this, the Patsi, they deteriorate. Lefi, have you... Shtamshin behem, because they are used, behuma kablon bepochus chomish, and so he reduces them by 20%. If they are worth 1,000, he writes into the kasuba 8,000. So the Gemara wants to say, surely it's like vessels of silver. Says the Gemara, no, it's like vessels of gold. Follow? Because they're not used. It's like vessels of gold, because they're not used, and then they are assessed like vessels of gold. So, the Gemara says, in that case, it should have said, in the Baraisa, it should have said, Har Zov arehu kekelov. Zov is to be assessed like vessels of its own kind, of its own metal. That says the Gemara, there is another question. The ode, and furthermore, Tanya we learnt in another Baraisa. Point number one in this Baraisa, point number one, Zohov arehu kekeli. Zohov is like keli. Now, we are trying to solve, what does it mean, arehu kekeli? Is it vessels of silver or vessels of gold? That is what we are trying to solve. If it's vessels of gold, they are put in for that price. If it's vessels of silver, then they are put in for a lesser price. Zohov arehu kekeli. Zohov is like vessels, but we don't like know like whether vessels of gold or vessels of silver. Point number two. Din rei zohov harehen kikasofim. But gold coins, gold dinorim, gold dollars, they are like money. So if she brings in gold dollars, then how much does he put into the kesuba?
1,500.
A third more. Then he puts in $1,500. He puts in 1,500.
This is still part of the price.
Invest immediately. You can invest. Are we pardon?
This is part of the price still.
This is part of the price. Point number two in the price. Now comes the third part of the price. I'm putting it for one, two, and three. Because if I had a blackboard or a green board, it's chalk. There's no chalk there, is there? Is there? Oh, then I might have to put it onto the board just to avoid any confusion. I'm just putting point one, point two, and point three because I don't want any confusion here. Point three is Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, B'mokum she'noagu she'lou lefo'urton. Shamin oson v'harei hein b'shiv yehin. In a place where one doesn't change the dinorim into smaller denominations, that's what the word lifrot means. It comes from the word prat, prat, particular. The English word particular comes from that part, part, particular. Comes from the same. To make it into parts, to break it up. And in Israel today, if you go to Israel, you go into a bank, you've got a 1,000 shkolim in one church. Can you change it for me? That is, break it up for me. Give me hundreds or give me tens for it. It's exactly the same word is used. And I explained to you that when these people were busy, Bialik was perhaps at the head of them, Ben Elozer, a few of these people were busy creating the modern Hebrew language, it was only because they had been to yeshivas that they could do it. These are the words that they took. You see, it came quite natural to them. So when you say, how do you say to change money? Lifrot et hakesef. They had no difficulty. Stay there from here.
No.
That's from where it comes, right? So Ram Shimon Gamliel Omer b'mokum she'noagu she'lo lefo'urton. Shamin oson va'arei b'shiv yehen. If it is in a place where you don't change these goldy norim, then you leave them as then it's 1,000 dinorim or 1,000 dinorim. They are assessed in their value and that is all. They're not with a third more.
Like
Kaylee, yes, not with the third more, but they are exactly.
They wouldn't be used. Is that what
yeah.
you're saying?
No, like Kaylee shows a heart specifically.
Now,
Kaylee in general has
a I just want to, at this stage, I just want to, because I see that I'm trying to reduce the amount of confusion in this piece of Gemara. And I'm learning it like Rashi. I'm not touching the Tosfos. There's a rach in the Tosfos. I don't want to touch. It's not necessary. First of all, let us get it. So the first thing that seems to be worrying you, and I think that we should clear the air on this particular point, and I can understand that it is worrying. The first thing that is worrying us is where the Gemara says that if you've got Zohar, and Rashi says, what does Zohar mean? Pieces of gold. Harehen kechivyo. On the back, the file. I've got no difficulty with that. Then we quote a Baraisa, and the Baraisa says, Maisvei says, the Baraisa will ask you a question in the Hazohov Arehu Kekeli. Zohov is like vessels. And we wanted to say like vessels of silver, we said, no, it's like vessels of gold. So what is it? Why have we got to say it's like vessels of gold? Zohov is Zohov. You say that they are pieces of gold. Big pieces, small pieces, round pieces, oblong pieces, square pieces, vase. So, what have you got to say? It's like vessels of gold. Why should we say that?
Doesn't deteriorate with use.
Then gold also doesn't deteriorate.
No, we say it's like vessels of gold.
Yes, but what do we need it? Surely it's, if to tell us that it doesn't deteriorate with use, leave it as it is. I can understand better than
you
it doesn't deteriorate.
You might think that you mark it up.
Why should you mark it up?
Because you might think it's a currency or an item of value that can be used in financial transactions,
yes.
Whereas a kalim shel sahab
yes.
are not going to be used in financial transactions.
Yes. Now, I think that what we've got to be aware of here is something else.
Is that correct?
What is worth more? We'll get it right. What is worth more? A piece of gold, any kind of shape, and he has another piece of gold, another piece of shape of gold, and it all adds together to X grams. Do they use grams for the sort of thing? No, they use ounces also.
Yeah,
all ounces. Let us say ounces. it's got a square piece, a round piece, or put it together, you weigh it, and let us say it weighs 5 ounces. Is that worth more, or is this worth more? Those 5 ounces are made into this cufflink.
Cufflink is worth more.
Yeah, cufflink is more. Yeah. But because it's been shaped and it's something that people want.
Yes, it's been worth more. I've got another pair of cufflinks where there is not a Kruger rand, but a gold rand, which is much smaller than a Kruger rand. And this part of the cufflink is a gold rand. Mm-hmm. Now, are the cufflinks worth more than that gold rand or not?
Actually, probably not.
You're quite right.
It actually works in reverse.
You're quite right.
And why?
Because I don't know.
Because you can't spend them?
No, because it feeds it in trade. Oh, pardon?
It's worth more in trade strictly as a gold rand than it is attached to a
coin. I don't know. I can't tell you why.
According to the Gemara, it's worth more if it's the coin, because the coin can be invested in that coin.
Right.
I can't tell you what it is, but I'm just telling you these two things, because they're both, you've got to take both things into consideration. And again, you've got a situation where I would say that it's worth more because there's the workmanship too. And on the other hand, it seems to be worth less. We're coming to the Gemara, yes?
In the United States, it used to be, before you could own gold, that the way you would buy gold was buying, say, a cufflink or a tie clip that was made out of a coin or was made in a known value.
Yes.
And that way, it was just a way of getting around the law.
Yes, but
and
that's so, a different thing. Now, we're not... There they had no law.
But the point was is that then you knew exactly the value of the coupling in terms of the gold.
The value.
And so it was more like money in that
the
sense.
The value changes also as a function of whether you're buying it or selling it.
Of course. You could have 10 ounces of gold in Kruger Rands.
That would in fact be worth more than if you were to walk into a goldsmith with 11 ounces of loose gold.
Yes, that would be the Kruger rand would be worth more.
Exactly.
Yes, but we're not discussing that now because those are din razor.
Okay.
We're not discussing din razor. We're discussing that gold, pieces of gold, that is what we are discussing. Now, what is done is, it's very difficult. For us it's easy, you see. For us it's easy because gold is a commodity and silver is a commodity. It's very easy to speak of it in terms of weight and things like that. But I'm just thinking of something else. A piece of timber, but good timber, not the timber that you use for firewood, but a piece of timber. If somebody comes and brings you a piece of timber, and he says, well, you can make a chair out of it. So, right, you make a chair out of it, I'll buy a chair from you. But you're not going to do it. Now, what it is you value it. It was very difficult to value gold just as gold. It was either a coin or it was an object in those days. But it's not like today, where a bar of gold is a bar of gold. You follow? So that is why, how do you value it? You value it as if it was made into a clip. It's such a valuable piece of work. It's such a valuable metal that how do you value it? You value it as if it is a clip. That is all it says. Got it? A vessel.
Like a kaolin, yes.
You value it as if it were a vessel. Is that easier? So now just... Yes.
If you have an ounce of gold or an ounce of gold in earrings, it's identical.
You see, they couldn't weigh an ounce of gold. They couldn't weigh
it. But they measured the displacement.
So what they did was, the way they did it was, if you had a piece of gold, they would say, well, you could make a pair of cufflinks from that. So, that's what you could do with it. Then it's assessed according to the cufflinks.
Why did they?
You can make earrings out of this.
Right.
Then it's assessed according to the earrings.
I see.
You can make a ring for a finger. Then it's assessed according to the ring. Because it was difficult otherwise to do it. They didn't have a scale that you could say so many ounces, so many
why
grams.
Why didn't they? The Torah even speaks of it. I rephrase that.
Yes.
I thought they always could measure by weight.
Yes, they speak about weight and about talent and silver and all like that, but it is always in size. This was the size of it. This was the size of the thing. But yeah, you're speaking about lots of little pieces.
In other words, you're saying they could do it, they just didn't.
No,
they chose not to.
What you could do is they had a bar of gold.
Okay.
But here you are speaking, that's what Rashi says, chaticha zov. It's not a bar of gold. It's pieces.
Little pieces.
Little pieces of gold.
So that they wouldn't.
So this is the way they assess it is, the Braisa says, on Kalim. Okay. So we have got, the first thing we've got is the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Hichvisa lo sov, shamin o sov ha'arei v'chibyo. That is the statement. Just read it to me, please. Alright, that is the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. I'm just putting in here Rabbi Yochanan, right? That's the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Now you've got the Barasa. Now, in Braise, the Braise is divided into three parts. The first part, what is it? Zahav. Who? Kekeli.
Zahavare. Dinari Zahav Harehav.
Dinari Zahav.
Harehain Tisafin.
And the third one is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel.
Mishnagu shall the parts on
Shemino Tova Lehen
Shinduagu shall the photon. Shall the photon, yes.
Shemino Tova Lehen Shemino.
Shamin Oson Beharei Hey Tishivyehe. The first thing we've got, Rabbi Yochanan's point, Ichnisa lezov Shamin Oseva Harei Tishovye. Says the Gemara, Meisvei, Hazov Harehu Kekelim, my love Kekelim shall Kesef Gepachsi. So, what kind of vessels do we shamin in? So in the Braisa we've got kekelim shel kesef tepachsi that diminish in value. Says the Gemara, lo kekelim shel zov de lo pachsi. It means kelim shel zov de lo pachsi. He asks the Gemara, im kein kekelov mi boyalei. So it should have said kekelov. The old Daniel, and furthermore we have learned, now this is the brighter that we've got to unravel. Zoho varehu kekeli. The point number one. So what we want to try and discover is, what does it mean, silver vessels or gold vessels? That's what we want to discover. But the statement is, the gold is assessed as if it were vessels. Number two, dinre zo varehen keksopi. Gold coins, it's like currency, it's like money, and he's got to put into the tesubah a third more. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, v'mokum she'noagu she'lev lefauton shaminoson v'harei b'shov yeyan. If they, it's in a place that they do not change, do not use it as currency,
din reizov,
then they are assessed according to their worth. If there was 1,000 din reizov, so he puts in 1,000 dinori into the kesuba. Say, ask the Gemara now, that is the end of the braisa. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Ahen. On what is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel speaking? Now, the normal thing that we say is he speaking about one or two. And the only one he can speak about is three. Is he speaking about one or two? What would we say? He's speaking about this one. Din Reizor, they are assessed according as if they were married. That means if she brings in 1,000, into the Kesuba goes 1,500. David, are you with me? Goes 1,500. Fine. Din Reizor, that is, as says Ram Gamliel, as long as they are, it's going to be used as money. But if it is a place, if it's a place where you don't use that money, you don't spend that money, you keep it, then it's got to be like its own value. That would make absolute sense. That would make sense. The Gemara, however, is not satisfied with that. And just look at the inside. Says the Gemara, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Ahay. On what is Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Gay? Ilemo Asseifo. If we will say that it is on the Seifo, Michlal de Tana Kama Sover, Afilu Bemokum She Noagu She Lola Foton. That even that the Tanakhama is of the opinion that even in a place where you don't spend it, you also have got to assess it with a third more. You understand? You follow how?
Is that what Nifake means?
Look here. You've got point one and point two. This is the Tanakhama. This is the Tanakhama. And point three is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, if the money, if it is a place where the money is not currency, then you've got to be assessed for what it is worth. 1,000 dinari, not 1,500. So, of what does Rabbi Gamliel say? If he says, he says it on this, then what does it mean? If this money is not to be used as currency, then don't assess it as kasofim, as money, and make it 1,500, but make it 1,000. Okay. That's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says. Which means, which implies, that the Tanakhama, that if this says, it makes no difference. My statement is whether it is used for currency or even if it's not used for currency, you must still assess it at 1,500. Because if you don't say that, then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying exactly the same as the Tanakhama. So he's not adding anything, he's not contributing anything. So it would appear that he disagrees and the Tanakhama disagrees with him. Says the Gemara, but that can't be. If you say Rabbi Shimon Gamliel goes on this, then it can't be. Because it would mean that even if it's not being spent, he must push to put 1,500. The Tanakhama couldn't say that.
Couldn't he just be explaining the Tanakhama?
Well, we're going to get something like that, but it's not so simple. I mean, you see, you can't...
I can't just be in an exceptional case, but normally if it's gold that can be exchanged, it's like
if he says, this is only if it's not in use. But doesn't the Tanakhama say that itself? That's what the Tanakhama says. What are you adding? What are you telling me? What are you telling me here? I said, Dr. Krauss is at the shir. Dr. Krauss is sitting at the table at the shir. So what am I telling you? Why do I repeat it? It's not necessary. I've got to give you PTR. So the only way, if we say it goes on number two, you've got to say that number two disagrees with that. What would he say? That even in a place where you don't use it in currency, you also have to assess it at 1500. He says, what a lucky. But you don't spend it, he doesn't spend it. So why make it 1500? How can you make it 1500? So therefore you can't say that Abba Kim Gambier is speaking about this. So if he's not speaking about this, you've got to say he's speaking about the first one. We'll see how it goes now. You'll get it quite easily.
Says the Gemara, El the Holy Kama Zovare Rav Shimon Gamli Harei Utilin Dorim Shah. Yes, says the Gemara, Rav Shimon Gamli Elahe Ilei Moas Seifo. If you will say on number two, Michlal the Tana Kama Zovare Afilu Bevokim Shelo Agul Shelo Lefayoton, then the Tana Kama must be of the opinion that even if it's not spent on money, he also has to put in for 1500. Says the Gemara Holo Nafki, but the money isn't spent, it doesn't go out. So,